I have a ton of stuff to talk to you about this week. We're going to talk some NFL, some NBA, and of course, there's a lot going on in the news in terms of social issues, stuff that we definitely need to dive into. But I saw a hiring at Tennessee State, Eddie George, and I heard that they might be interested in one Hugh Jackson for our offensive coordinator. Now, before you say anything, before you say anything, I'm going to make a pitch for them, and then you tell me, because I know you got something to tell me. I think not only is it a great situation, and listen, you know how I feel about you. You are an NFL caliber coach, but the type of person that I've grown to see that you are, I think the effect that you can have on, I don't know if it was in your plans to go back to school, but the type of person I know that you are off the field, forget the on the field stuff, which I think is fantastic. Off the field, I know that you're a good person. And I think you can help these student athletes grow not only as football players, but as men. So, any breaking news you have for us, please let me know.
I have breaking news for the Anthony K and Coach segment that Hugh Jackson will be going to Tennessee State and working with the great Eddie George. And I'm so excited about having this opportunity to work with Eddie and to help him build something special there.
How so this, when I it first came across my desk a couple of days ago that it might be a thing, and right away I thought, you know what? Like I said, I think it's great, and I don't know, like I said, if you were even thinking about it. How do you know Eddie? How did this happen?
I don't really know Eddie personally. I know of Eddie, and then I do know Jeff Fisher, and I think Jeff Fisher has really been assisting Eddie and putting things in place. And talk to Jeff, talk to Eddie. We hit it off, over the phone. I have some similar vision of what we want to try to create. Obviously, it's through his vision. He's the head coach, and I just want to assist him. And one thing led to another, and we put the pieces of it together, and I'm going to go down and work in Tennessee.
I love it. Have you been to, I know it's very early to say, but have you been down to kind of the Nashville area? And I've spent some time, Nashville, Franklin, which is just outside of Nashville. I love it. It's a great place, obviously for music and for sports. Have you had a chance to dive in a little at all yet?
I've been there before. Obviously, I've played there so many times and other things in the past, but I'm looking forward to really understanding the communities that are there and being a part of a great university. And as I said, helping Eddie George become the best he can become.
It's been a while since you were down, were working in, in the college ranks. Excited?
Oh, yeah, I am. I know it'll be a different challenge. Recruiting is different. I remember recruiting. At one time, I recruited two Heisman Trophy winners. So I know what that is. I know what that looks like. And looking forward to, like I said, helping and assisting any way that I can. But it'd be different, but excited about it. Yes.
I love it. That is fantastic. What's the next steps? So do you jump right in? Are you at that point yet?
I think, yeah, well, I think it's a little different now, like you said,
All
with
right.
COVID and everything that's gone on, and the team just now getting finished playing. And kudos to the staff that was there. I think those guys worked extremely hard, Coach Reed and his staff, to give that team a chance. But whatever Eddie lays out, whatever process he wants, that's the road I'm going to travel and kind of go from there.
Well, congratulations, Coach. I think they're very lucky to have you. And
Thank you.
it's I look forward to seeing what happens down in Tennessee State. I am now a Tigers fan, so
Let's
you
go
got what
blue.
you got you got I
That's
look good in blue, I gotta tell you. So it's
right.
I'm excited. And it's not really a good news story unless you're one of the teams later on in the draft. But Stephen A. Smith this week kind of came out and said the reasons he believes Justin Fields is kind of dropping in the rankings. A lot of them have him ranked as their number two quarterback behind Trevor Lawrence. But when you see kind of the draft boards, the mock drafts, whosoever it is, he seems to be kind of four, five, depending on whose draft board you're looking at. How does a quarterback this good, this talented, who who has the statistics, has basically what you're looking for in a quarterback. Now, I guess I should ask, did you hear kind of what Stephen A's opinion was? It's kind of the case of the black quarterback. Or do you see something in his game that maybe justifies that happening?
I don't see anything that justifies that happening any more than it's justified any other quarterback that came before him, you know, in that situation. I think he's starting to get what's called the Ohio State effect on him a little bit. You know, there hasn't been many quarterbacks that's come out of Ohio State and, you know, played well in the National Football League. I think that's unfair for him, you know, but those comparisons do start to happen as it gets closer to the draft. I mean, all it takes is one person to throw a narrative out there and people run with it, you know, but I think the guy's very talented. Obviously, he didn't come to Ohio State in the beginning. He was at Georgia. He transferred to Ohio State. He's a tremendous football player. He just needs opportunity. He really needs just one team to make a decision to draft him. And that's going to happen. It's just when and where he's going to go, I think, is the thing that's up in the air. And those kind of guys have a chip on their shoulder, and they'll come and he'll play well in the National Football League.
Yeah, listen, I wouldn't be upset, you know, if he dropped to, I don't know, 20th. Wouldn't be a
problem. The Bears are not getting him.
I know. But, you know, I figured I'd ask because, like, when I heard that story from Stephen A, like I said, I dove in and I dive into stuff. And,
yes, you do.
And everybody's, yeah, he's the second, you know, almost everybody said he's the second best quarterback in the draft. Well, then how come he's not going number two to the Jets? If he's the second best quarterback in the draft, it was very odd to see, you know, to see that. Now you still don't know, right? Technically, you know, the assumption is Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, but I guess you never really know what's going to happen.
You don't know, but like we always say, where there's smoke, you know? And so right. When they're saying that he's falling and the other guys are rising, that tells you something because that's the information that's getting out there. How much of it is, like you say, factual, we'll know on draft day. But at the same time, I think it's unsettling for a player like him. Who knows that he's a really good player? Who knows he should be considered anywhere from 1 to 5, you know? And if he doesn't go then, that's disappointing.
When you see, like I saw, you know, another, there was a, on the Pat McAfee show, I believe, and they'd come out and said, oh, he's, you know, last one in, first one out. But again, it only takes one of those things, right, to kind of spiral and one person picks it up. And now that becomes the perception. And unfortunately, perception sometimes becomes reality. So
like I said, that's disappointing. Why does that even come out? You know, that means a coach had to say that or verify who says that, you know, because there's no announcer or anybody in sports that could say he comes in early and leaves. I mean, comes in late and stays, leaves early. How can that be justified? You know, let's have a coach says that that's from Ohio State, not somebody talking about sports who somebody gave them some third hand information and put that out there. I don't think that's fair.
It's the third hand, right? So, you know, one of my favorite shows other than this one is I Am Athlete. And Channing yesterday said, you got to evaluate your evaluator.
Yes.
And I think that's important, right? Unless it was mm-hmm. his coach, unless it was mm-hmm. his, you know, OC or positional coach, whatever, unless mm-hmm. it was one of those people saying that's the case, then I don't let it affect my opinion of him.
Right.
And you know, unfortunately, those some people will. And I think that's the problem that faces them sometimes.
That is what's going on. You know, there's no question about that.
You know, I want to talk more football. I want to talk more sports, but there's so much going on that I think we need to kind of dive right into many things that are going on. Have you been paying attention to the Chauvin trial?
Yes, I have.
SNL did a skit, I think, to kick off the show on Saturday where, okay, based on all the facts that we've seen, there's no chance that he gets off. And they kind of went, why is there always that feeling of, well, do you think there's any chance prior to what happens? We're going to talk about, obviously, Dante Wright in a second. Do you think there's any chance that with what you've seen, he is somehow... that jury somehow does not convict him for what was done?
There is no way. And if it is, it will start a riot like people have never seen before. And we think we witnessed some tough times for a while there. It won't stop. So I don't think there's any way that he gets off.
I've been watching it. I don't know if I've told you this before, but my wife is an investigator. And she's not very into criminology and some of these other things. And so she has been glued and kind of coming to me with, you know, I watch as much as I can, but anything I miss, she's quick to update me on it. And so just this, basically the stuff that's come out, there's no, like, I mean, the experts that they had in, they just, there's so much things that we didn't even notice. You know, right. one where he said, oh, he's pushing his finger up against the tire. I would never think, what does that mean? Oh, it's trying to open up his lungs so he can breathe. You know, things like that that I never would have known. And now I can't say these names, obviously, but there were people, you know, I try to be as active as I can in social, who months ago said, well, who've now, you know, we're on the other side, who've messaged me and said, you know, don't share me, but you know what? I've been watching the trial and my opinion has changed. I didn't know this and that and the other thing. I believe the narrative, right? Because everyone had their own. And I think, I hate to say it, because, you know, you hate bad things to happen.
Right.
But I feel like a lot of eyes have been opened into,
absolutely,
you know, what's can happen, right? If you take, look, he took it, he was excessive. He took it too far. He knew better, because it wasn't the first time,
right,
that he had taken it too far.
Absolutely. I just, you know, Anthony, this is such a eye-opener for everyone. There's so many things that people are learning through this process that can happen, has happened, shouldn't happen. How everybody deals with this, they're going to deal with it their own way. Obviously, the law is going to, the process is going to take care of itself. But I just think there's so many other little things that people are starting to really understand better about what the police potentially could do and do to you, that we all have to be very careful, you know, as we move forward. And it's unfortunate, but there are bad cops, just like there's bad people. And I think those things are now really bubbling to the surface.
I think there's two things. So one, and this is a much bigger issue, and we've talked about it with some other people before, just kind of the way that policing was set up from, you know, the beginning, right? Yes. Was to police certain things. And so it's kind of ingrained. That being aside, because I think that's like a two-hour, that's a forever conversation. I don't think that's something we talk, like, we can get through today. But the other one, the smaller one, and, you know, I can't believe I'm going to kind of quote Chris Rock, but, you know, he did say, look, there's certain jobs where, look, people are human. There's good and bad in all of us. You know, we all make mistakes. There's all those things, right? I'm not discounting any of that. But certain jobs, right? You want your heart surgeon, you know, to make less mistakes, right? Yes. You want your pilot, right? You don't want to say, most of them know how to land, right?
Right.
And so it's important that when you see things like this, that we don't, because what has happened, you know this, it's been polarizing. People have taken one side or the other, right? It's, well, you got to protect the police. Well, you got to protect the people. And really it's more like a middle thing where the police are there to serve and protect the people, but they need the training to understand how to handle it. And it brings me to the next thing that I wanted to talk to you about, because about 10, I think, I don't know if it was 10 minutes or 10 miles away from the trial.
10 miles.
A police officer who's not a rookie pulled out, said it was a mistake and pulled out the gun instead of the taser. Now, I was living in San Francisco, I'm going to forget how many years ago, but let me say maybe 12 or 14 years ago. And I don't know if you remember this story, but there was the young man on the I forget what it's called, the subway, the Amtrak, the BART, that's what it was, on the BART. And it was the same thing, pulled out the taser instead of the gun and got off. And there were some riots there. I was, unfortunately, right down in that area, which was, you know, it was scary. But I understand, because when you hear stuff like that and then the person gets off, what do you know about this one? And, you know, How can you make that mistake? Can you make, I don't know. I've never had a taser, but I know what a gun feels like. And I don't know that I, you know, in the heat of the moment, you know, should cops be better than that to panic?
I go back to Chris Rock, you know, just what you said a second ago. You can't, you got to be the best at certain jobs. And that definitely is one of, as a cop, especially when you have a gun in your possession. You just said something that to me is so crystal clear. How can you, having practice with a taser gun, not know that it's, that it is or isn't, however you want to look at it, when you get ready to shoot someone? You got to know. I mean, you have to have an idea. This guy had no gun. He had, I mean, he sat back down. Did he turn away from the police? Yes, he got back in the car. But it wasn't like they thought he was getting in the car to get a weapon. That was crystal clear. I mean, obviously he was getting in a car to get away from them. And you shoot this individual with a gun and you go, oh, I shot him. And I just, there's just no way. You can't make that mistake and then say, okay, I just made a mistake. You just took a life, you know, and I don't agree with it by any way, shape, or form. I'm disappointed that the person's not in jail at this time. Somebody said that she resigned. I don't know if that's
so true. So interesting. There's been multiple reports. So one said that she was fired. Then mm-hmm. it came out and said she resigned. But then also I believe the chief of police also resigned. But then the person who now, and I forget his name, but who's now in charge said hasn't necessarily accepted that resignation yet. So clearly not fired if you haven't accepted the resignation. Mm-hmm. But why, you know, I don't know. I guess there's more details to follow. So there's still some questions. Mm-hmm. But this was sent to me. And so I hope this means that we're getting through to some people, but someone sent this to me right after it happened. And I'm just going to read it because I think it's important. I think, unfortunately, it's true. We live in a world where trained cops can panic and act on impulse, but untrained civilians must remain calm with a gun in their face.
It's sad. Think about that. I mean, just let that sit right there. What they said is so true. You know, we have to be at our best when you're arresting us. And there's total fear, because that's what I felt the young man was feeling. I mean, the thing that's so different about what happened with George Floyd and with this young man, we saw it. We saw it in real time, how it really happened. And it is unacceptable, any way you put it, to have somebody's knee on your neck, to have somebody mistakenly shoot you because they thought they were using a taser. I don't care how you slice it, talk about it, whatever, it's wrong. And the people should face consequences because of it, and they will. But it's going to, the longer, it's almost like the thing with the first trial with George Floyd. The longer this goes on and the right things are not being said, the worse it's going to get. And to me, I don't understand why, if I was to shoot somebody, I'm going straight to jail. If that was me that made that mistake, I'm going to jail. Mm-hmm. Oh, I made a mistake. I didn't mean to shoot him. You know, I had this toy gun in my other hand I was going to use. I mean, really? I mean, I'm going to jail. So why can't that person go to jail? Because they said they made a mistake. And just to stop the civil unrest that people were feeling, if that person was put in jail, everybody's whole mindset would change. Everything would be different.
Now, I'm going to be the devil's advocate for a second.
Okay.
In the line of fire, right, as a police officer, there are mm-hmm. situations where it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And to say that if they shoot someone, you immediately put them to jail, you know, there's going to be a portion of people, that obviously police officers, who's going to want to be a police officer? But there's right. a portion that's going to say, well, you can't just throw them right into jail. So I understand, I say, you know, with some hesitation, mm-hmm. if they didn't necessarily go to jail, but perhaps, you know, if there's a shooting, and even as an officer, you kill somebody, you go somewhere, right? Like, maybe you don't just necessarily drop them into Gen Pop and be like, oh, it was a justified shooting, right?
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, there needs to be, but you can't just go back business as usual. You need to, something needs,
that's got to be a consequence. How do you walk away from a killing and go live your normal life until somebody else makes a decision about bringing you in and really investigating this? Why not do it the other way? Let's leave you somewhere and start an investigation before you go back and live your normal life. Because I just know if this was a minority in that situation, that ain't happening. You're going to jail. Mm-hmm. Now you're at least going to a holding cell.
You're
going to something. Yeah, you're going to something. And that's all I'm saying. I mean, it's so obvious to me, Anthony, that things are so different.
Even when the George Floyd thing first happened, you knew, if you're honest with yourself and you paid attention, you knew the second they put him on trial, right? Because that's what happened, right? Derek Chauvin put his knee on his throat and did what he did. Now they weren't, there was reports about heart attacks and it was the drugs and or his knee. Fine. We didn't necessarily know. But what was the first thing that you heard? Well, he wasn't a good guy. He has a drug problem. He's been to jail. He's a criminal. He's not on trial. He's not on trial. It's the person who killed him.
Killed him.
Right. That person needs to be tried first. Mm-hmm. Before, and that was the one that kind of clicked right away when I went, why are you making this about him? Let's be honest. Just because, look, was he a good person? I don't think he was. But
give you a right to kill him.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Absolutely.
I hate to say it, but I can be the scum of the earth. It doesn't mean you can just go out and kill me. There's anarchy, right? We can't just do that.
Absolutely. Trust me,
there's a lot of people that probably deserve, but you can't. Yes. You can't just do that.
And it's just like this young man. I read somewhere where it said he had a warrant. What does that got to do with anything? Whether he did or didn't, why didn't we hear about that during the arrest? There's a warrant for your arrest. We hear it all the time. It's always after the fact. I mean, that's normally what they do. They go dig up whatever they can dig up to make it seem like they're justifying what happened. And that's so disappointing.
I don't know how it is where you are, but there can be a warrant for your arrest for parking tickets. That doesn't mean I'm a dangerous person that needs to be, It seems to be excessive. And we've talked about it before, this fear of the unknown. I don't know what it is, fear of the black man. I don't get it. And maybe that's why it's hard for me, is because I don't get it.
Right.
Like, and again, like I said, there's so much. So not only that, but there was an incident in December where, and again, I apologize that I don't have the name on the tip of my tongue here, but in December, where he was in a brand new vehicle, he had his printed plate on the back window. He's still in his, I believe, army gear, and he gets pepper sprayed and pulled out of the car. And again, like I said, I hate that this stuff is happening. I'm so happy to everyone who listens to the show and shares it with me, but it was, if this was disrespect, so they sent me a picture, a meme, whatever. You're right. If this is disrespecting our troops, and it shows a picture of Colin Kaepernick taking a knee, and then it just says, what is this? And it shows them pepper spraying him through the window of his car. And it's just like, so if you were that upset that an athlete who wasn't protesting against the military, we know that, right? If you're that upset about him disrespecting our troops, are you going to come with the same amount of passion towards these officers that did this to him?
You just said keep the same energy, and we don't in certain situations. It really just goes away, basically. And it's just, there's so many things, Anthony K, that I'm just flabbergasted at. I mean, this happens in Minnesota again. It's just 10 miles away from where the trial is going on. Here's another family. The other tie-in is that George Floyd's sister was this kid's teacher in high school. there's another tie in here. Yeah. And so I don't think that had anything to do with what happened, but at the same time, just look at how this thing is working. You know, I'm a big believer that things happen for a reason. And I don't know what this reason is, but we haven't learned. We still haven't learned that this isn't okay. And that's the biggest thing that I think we all have to deal with. There needs to be a huge change. There needs to be a huge shift, you know, and I'm fed up. I know you're fed up. We're all fed up and we deal with it. We talk about it. We have great conversations, but I never see the needle really move.
You know, that was going to be my next question are we, you know, the you know, George Floyd was it about a year ago now, right?
Yeah.
So it's been a year, and to say, well, that's not a long time. Well, no, it's been longer than a year because this stuff has been happening. Right. Yes. Like, how long ago was Rodney King?
Right.
Right. Like, has it changed? And we can go back further than that, of course. But I mean, what has changed?
Like we're placating this whole thing. You know, it's just, here it is. Okay. Well, I mean, it shouldn't happen. Here it is. I mean, there's a trial, and this trial is played out in front of everybody, you know, and I get it. And this lady, I resign or whatever it is she does, but oh, I shot him. I didn't mean to. It was a taser I was going to use, and not again. What is this?
Yeah, and look, I think the taser's on the left, the gun's on the right. Come on, from what I'm understanding, they feel different. There's a different weight. You're trained
to know the difference. You are a trained professional. Come on, I can't happen. That can't happen.
I said we want to talk about it, but then I think, but nothing, it's in the same place. It's, you would think, right? Like, I'm going to be a little bit more aware, a little bit more cautious. Like, I understand what's happening.
It can happen, especially there.
Right. It shouldn't happen anywhere, but
it sure can happen there. And it does again. And we say, okay, I just saw the face of the lieutenant of the whatever he's called that leads the police department. It was like, oh gosh, he had to make this announcement. And it was like, she made a mistake. How do you say that?
How do you
come out and tell the rest of the world, she made a mistake, as opposed to, we just need to investigate this and get it right? Nobody wants to say, because you can't make a mistake. How can you say that? She made a mistake. At least don't say that. At least say, you know what? This is a tough situation. We need to investigate this and get it right for all involved and move on from there.
Right.
But it's, boy, she thought it was a taser, et cetera. You just said, we know a taser from a gun. We know what side it's supposed to be on. We know what we're pulling. I mean, you're talking about somebody's life.
And I think that's unfortunately what happens, right? They immediately into defense mode.
Yes.
He had a warrant. She made a mistake. It's immediately putting as much doubt into what could be a jury pool, right, as possible, which, you know, I hate to say it.
It goes back to what you said earlier. It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. The kid is dead. He was shot. He had no weapons on him. He had nothing on him. And you just took a life. That's not okay.
The one that's, you know, I understand the resigning of the job. But to think that, and I hope that's not the thought process, but to think that resigning is enough. Right, like, could you imagine if in one of our jobs, right, I pulled out a gun and shot someone, went, oh, sorry, it was a mistake, let me quit my job. Everything will be fine. I'll go over here. I get it. Being a police officer is different. Don't, to all my police officers out there, please, I'm not saying.
No doubt.
I got to tell you this because I think it's interesting. And I don't know why it happened, but my senior year in high school, of the 15 players on my basketball team, 10 of them are police officers. 10 of them. Mm. And so I understand how tough their jobs are. Now, I would 9 of the 10 are Black. 1 is Asian. And, you know, we have these conversations and it's just like, and they just shrug, you know, it's not that they just shrug their shoulders, but they're just like, I don't get how, because I asked them, can you make that mistake? And, you know, off the record, they're up, you know, don't look me up. They all went, yeah, right. Like, don't look up who I went to high school with. But they were all just kind of like, no, that doesn't happen. I guess, you know, if you're flustered, you can make a mistake, but you can't make that mistake, right?
Right. You just can't. And I think we've been saying that since we've been sitting here. You cannot. And I think if you do, you shouldn't be in charge to carry a firearm.
100%.
There's just no way. But we can't take that chance of finding out if you're going to make that mistake, because you take a life, you know. And it's hard to think through that a person didn't know that they were carrying, they were using a gun instead of using a taser. It's hard to think through that here we are 10 miles from where the trial's going on, that this young man's getting killed, you know. It's hard to believe that we would talk about somebody resigning. We would talk about a mistake as opposed to understanding what civil unrest is going to create, you know, by the words that are said, because it just, that feeling of being in a state of how do I cope with this? How do I even deal with this? People don't know how to continue to deal with this. Everybody, you know, gets on edge.
Yeah.
You know,
I want to go back to something you said, because I'm going to change the narrative for a second. So they came out and said, you know, there was a mistake, there was a warrant, there was all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, if the narrative was, we came out and we said, look, this is what's happened. A police officer shot and killed someone. They have been detained. We are investigating the circumstances of this incident, and the second we get more details, we're going to come back to you. What a different feeling you have as a citizen, right? To say, okay, because look, they might come back and say, look, we investigated and they pulled a gun, they shot at the officer returned fire, and we all go, okay, not okay, but you know, we understand. Or they say, oh, that person who was detained, this would happen, now they're going to trial because whatever, mm-hmm. whatever the circumstances are. But I think that's what bothers, look, people being shot and killed. But I mean, after that, I think that's what bothers people, is the changing of the narrative, you know, in this particular case, that it was a mistake, that they had a warrant, like trying to make the victim, you know, now the person who needs a defense.
You just said it, Anthony, and that's what I was alluding to earlier. That's what gets me. The powers that be don't understand human nature, just people. But we're dealing with people, and at the end of the day, we rather give the headlines that get clicks and make things go and have people go, oh my gosh, than to say just what you just said, or to say, you know what, we have this person detained and we're going to get this right, period.
The right thing to do, and I'm preaching to the choir here, but the right thing to do typically is the most boring thing, right? It's just do it. Just do your, you know, I hate to steal from Bill Belichick, just do your job, right?
Absolutely.
Just and get to the bottom of things. And I think you're right. I think as a society, we've gotten to that point where it's, what's the flashy headline? What's the big news story?
Yes.
And you know, and I'm not picking on media here when I say this, but the second this comes out, you know, people on the right are going to spin a certain narrative. People on the mm-hmm. left are going to spin a narrative. And I said this a long time ago, and I'm going to say it again, and probably get me in trouble, but I don't care. I've noticed, right? So I moved to Arizona in 2004, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I really got into politics. I don't know why it happened. Just in 04, something happened and I got really into politics. And I started following everybody, left, right, middle, everything.
Right.
And all I noticed was every year, with every conversation, it seemed that everybody was saying something further away from each other just to make it seem, and then it just got to the point where it was so ridiculous. Right. And I started to think, as the years went on, they're going to get so far apart that it's going to be next to impossible to come back together, and you're never going to get anywhere unless there is, you know, we've talked about middle ground and what that actually means, but
right,
if you're just pulling this way, there, it's just harder and harder to come back together. And it's, I don't want to say it's impossible, because you know I'm an optimist and I, mm-hmm. I want things to be better, but it's there, we're all making it harder on ourselves by mm-hmm. allowing that kind of separation, right? Even if you just look at political parties, but I'm not just talking about that, it's just the way mm-hmm. people talk, the way people think, it's just, we've become so extreme, right? It literally is this person's the devil, or this person is, you know, just the best yes. thing ever. And there, yeah. and really, we're all somewhere in the middle. Like I'd love to say I'm on one side of that. I'm somewhere in the, we're all somewhere in the middle.
Right. No, you're right. I just, Anthony, this has been a hard one tonight, just because of what has happened. It's been a hard one just talking back through something that we all did not. I think people do understand it could happen, that these things can still happen. But I think everybody's shocked that it's happening so soon again. You know, it's like we haven't even, and the wound is back open because of the trial. Everybody's reliving it again, and bam, here comes something else just to knock you down again. And to hear those words, you know, mistake, resign, oh boy, you know, he had a warrant. It just, people get very angry, you know, because people are just really looking for a solution for all of this. And nobody's really talking about solutions the right way, because nothing ever gets done. So I'm concerned about where we're headed. I am concerned of the narrative and the spin that's out there right now for the lady who killed the young man. I'm really concerned for the family and everybody understanding what they're going through, the mom, the dad, the sisters. I mean, just, it's a hard time. And I just hope, again, when I think sometime we're working to get closer together to be able to have real conversations, something happens that just drives us further apart.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm scared.
And so let me say a couple of things, because obviously you mentioned the family, and obviously our condolences and our hearts go out to them. But mm-hmm. let me also say this, and this is on the Derek Chauvin trial part. So, because this is, you know, I like to always give both sides. The fact that his family, his wife, are being threatened, I think it needs to be mentioned, right? That's wrong.
Yes, that's
wrong. They had nothing to do yes. with what he did. And, correct. You know, like, I get the anger. We've talked about that a lot. I understand the anger, but you can't go mm-hmm. after his family. It's, that doesn't help at all. And, right. you know, I posted something a couple of days ago. I think I sent it to you where, I want to say it was Tony Robbins, where he's like, you know, good leaders spend 5% mm-hmm. on the problem, 95% of the time on the solution. And mm-hmm. I feel like we're spending 99% of our time on the problem, if not absolutely. More, if not more. And you know, hopefully that we can move that needle at least a little bit, because it's not trending in the right direction.
No, just a little bit. Just a little. I mean, yeah, hard.
So unfortunately we started with good news, but like I said, I thought it was important that we spent some time on, because there's, you know, I didn't even touch on everything. Like, that's just some of the stuff that's been going on. Mm-hmm. I wanted to end, and is there anything that you wanted, anything that we missed, just to give you a,
no, okay. No, I don't think so at all.
So I wanted to end because I want to kind of, I'm going to ask you a favor. And mm-hmm. it's to pass along a message, because we briefly okay. talked about it for about 1 second last week, and I wanted to give it a little more time. So, you know, I know that you are in communications with Brandon Marshall. Mm-hmm. And I saw this week's episode where he was a little hesitant to apologize to your good friend, Chad. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to pass along a message. And like I said it to you off kind of where we weren't recording, and I want to say it on because I want to post it and share it to him too. Of the NBA teams, there's a 15 man roster. Mm-hmm. The average team, because you know I went and did some research. Yeah. The average team, some have two, some have four, some have one, but the average team has three non-guaranteed contracts. Mm-hmm. I had a list, but as I started going through the list, it's a bunch of people you've never heard of. Let's just right. be honest.
Right.
And so their conversation was, why do NBA players seem to speak out more, whether it's about the team they want to play for, their contracts, social issues, versus NFL players? And obviously, a couple of guys said, well, it's because of the guaranteed contracts. Brandon got very heated, which, you know, was kind of out of character for him. He's typically very calm and collective, right? And I wanted you to pass along the message that, hey, it's the guys that matter. And I hate to say that some guys don't matter, but, you know, on every team, there's the stars and there's, you know, the role players.
Oh, yeah.
The stars have guaranteed contracts, and that's why they're pretty secure in speaking their minds. Whereas in the NFL, the majority of stars still don't have guaranteed. Like, I think Kirk Cousins maybe has a fully guaranteed contract, and I don't know who else has a fully guaranteed contract.
Right.
So that's really why, right? I think NBA players feel more confident. And look, and that's something that the NFLPA maybe needs to do a better job of, is getting more guaranteed contracts so that NFL players can feel better, more open about speaking their minds. Because it's important for people who have a platform. Now, I know some people are going to tell me to tell them, you know, shut up and dribble. You know, I don't believe that.
Right.
But, right, to allow them to feel comfortable in speaking their minds. So, you know, the next time maybe you're having that conversation,
I'll do that.
Send them my way or just let them know, hey,
absolutely.
You know, he was trying to say, oh, there's black and white. There's either they're all guaranteed or they're not guaranteed. It's gray, man. Like there's right. a lot of gray in the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what you just said says it all. You know, where people get their information from, sometimes I don't know. You know, sometimes there is bad information out there. Sure. You got to check the checker. You know, it goes back to the same thing. The one thing I know about you, you're going to get it right. And I hope nobody gave Brandon bad information. He came back and apologized for it. But at the same time, truly understanding what you just said and how powerful it is that guaranteed contracts allows people to have a voice. That's why you don't see a lot of the NFL players fighting back for the lack of diversity and inclusion in the National Football League. What can they say? They can't. They're afraid. You know, you can lose your value like that. That's why you don't hear coaches really talking about it a lot. You'll hear a squeaky wheel over here every now and then, but you don't hear it being just hammered, you know, because I'm going to all of a sudden lose my opportunity to coach in the National Football League. People say, why is Hugh Jackson now speaking out on certain issues I've had to deal with? Because I'm not afraid. They don't owe me anything, you know, so I can now say what I want. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but that's what it is. But that's bad. When you are oppressed from saying what is right, because you're worried that somebody's going to take something that's supposed to be yours, it should be unconstitutional. That shouldn't happen.
I think that people see, especially NFL players, right, making millions of dollars, and they think, well, you know, that's the life. They shouldn't be worried. They're talented. They'll have a job. But the reality is, although the money might be different, an NFL player is more like the regular guy that yes. I can't go out and say everything that's wrong at my company, because then I won't work for that company anymore.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, that's the reality of a non-guaranteed contract is you might, you know, I think they gave an example of, you know, some players having to pay back some money to get out of contracts. You know, I think they used an NBA example. LaMarcus Aldridge paid back $7 million. Mm-hmm. Yeah, LaMarcus Aldridge has made his money throughout he's at the end of his career, and he paid back $7 million to get bought out because he wanted to go join the Nets. He basically said, I'm paying $7 million so I can go chase a ring.
So I can go do what I want to do.
Yeah, for him, that was worth it. Mm-hmm. Now, you need to have a lot of money to say, here's $7 million back.
That means he does have a lot of money. People don't give $7 million.
People don't give $7 million. Listen, if anybody wants to give away $7 million, let me know. I'm here. Right. I'll take it. But yeah, you have to have it to give it away. So, you know, the dynamic is so different that, you know, I think it's important that we bring that to life, because like I said, we hold these athletes and coaches and, you know, on this pedestal sometimes. And I think it's important we realize we're all human beings. We all have our, you know, what we need to deal with. And, you know, and that's why I was so, it blew my mind when, you know, like, I think it was LeBron, someone from Fox News, when they told LeBron, you know, shut up and dribble. No.
Yes.
Why do I have the right to talk politics and they don't? we should all have that ability, right? That's, that freedom. Absolutely.
Freedom of speech.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Coach, there's a lot of good stuff here. Like I said, I'm glad we took some time to talk about it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On the new gig. I'm very excited to be a part of it. I'm joining in. Like I said,
let's go.
It just dawned on me. So I'm going to leave it with this because I know you best from the Raiders, but best from the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to the Tigers. So, you know, it's, I think it's right in your wheelhouse, right?
Absolutely. So I got these Tigers. I've had a Tiger. I was at UOP with the Fighting Tigers, and now I'm going to be with the Tennessee State Tigers. So let's go, Tigers.
Love it. Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Get the full Sports Fluent experience at sportsfluent.com. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at sports_fluent. You can search us on YouTube at SportsFluent, and don't forget to subscribe. Or if you're looking for some great merchandise or to support the podcast, visit sportsfluent.com/merchandise.